Welcome to show number 100 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by SportsCardRadio.com. Yo, what is going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in. We've made it to the triple digits, I guess. Or we've just made it. We made it to show number 100 literally about 4 years ago, over 4 years ago, I started this podcast. So I just want to quickly thank everybody that's sent me emails and got at me on, I mean, that was before Twitter and Facebook even existed, for the most part. So I just want to thank everybody that has contacted me and got in touch with me over the last couple of years and encouraged me and my brother, as you'll come to find out, to get more involved in the hobby. And at the time, I owned a sports card shop. So when I started this podcast, I was already deeply involved. And come to find out, we were involved in one of the deepest depressions in that the country, or recessions as they call it, that we've never seen. So I definitely have seen the ups and downs of life over the last 4 years. So I just want to say thank you, everybody. And we're just, that's all I'm going to say. I know I should thank a lot more people, but we've got business to take care of. My brother's in Baltimore, and a lot of you probably aren't listening to hear me talk about the last 4 years. You're here to talk about the last couple days. And my brother's been at the National Sports Collectors Convention in Baltimore and had kind of a first-hand access to lots of different photos, panel discussion by Tops, lots of different things going on. So without further ado, we'll get to that interview right after this. And we are back. We are joined on the telephone. It is show number 100, so it would be fitting that we are joined by my brother Brian. And not only that, is he's on location at the premier sports card show every year in Baltimore. So I'll get out of the way here. Let's just let Ryan talk a little bit about what's been going on, and then we'll get into some of the questions that I have here. So tell us about how it's been going in Baltimore, Ryan.
Oh, well, it's been going fantastic. Been here for the last 2 days, or 3 days, actually. I got in Tuesday before the show started. They had a little sneak peek on Wednesday that started at about 2:30 for VIPs, and the general public was able to get in at about 4 o'clock. And, well, I got in real early, actually, on Wednesday before even they let the general public in. They were nice enough to kind of let me in. I was able to take pictures, and it's a huge, huge area. The Baltimore Convention Center is a big, huge building in downtown Baltimore, kind of the heart of the city of Baltimore, right by Camden Yards and the Baltimore Ravens Stadium, M&T Bank Stadium. The convention center is a big, huge, I mean, we're probably talking, I don't know, 100,000 square feet or something, just wall-to-wall cards, dealer set up from the front to the back. You got booths from basically all the major manufacturers, Tops, Panini, Upper Deck, Historic Autographs, Bench Warmers. Beckett has a booth there. All the big kind of online retailers, Blowout Cards, DA, Pittsburgh Sports. And of course, just your kind of your mom and pop kind of dealers who have, you know, rented out a table and are selling some stuff. And anything you can think of is here. Vintage, new stuff, boxes, cases, single cards, autograph baseballs, autograph jerseys. There was a guy who had a really good deal on some just baseball jerseys, not autographs, just like those Majestic jerseys. Remember when we used to buy them jerseys for like $10 on eBay, the Majestic baseball jerseys? Yeah. I mean, I swear to God, I think this guy's here. It's just selling stuff. So we've just been, for the most part, I've just been trying to buy some stuff. Really kind of exploring the show, going through stuff, going through different booths, and talking to a bunch of different people from every company, from the small-time dealer up to people who work for Tops and Panini and Blowout Cards. Had a real nice conversation with Thomas Fish, who's one of the owners at Blowout Cards today. I actually recorded that, so something to look forward to probably in the next couple weeks here. But just been doing that. It's fantastic. Anybody who you know, has any interest in that kind of stuff or can get to next year, it's going to be in Chicago. So if you couldn't come this year but you're closer to Chicago or want to plan ahead, I highly recommend it. You know, and of course there's tons of autographed guests. I could just go on and on about really any kind of facet of collecting that you're into, whether it's vintage, whether it's new stuff, singles, whatever it is you're into, autographs. God, you could just clean up at places like this, and it's fantastic. And I've just been trying to do some shopping and really soak in the show. All the companies, Upper Deck, Panini, and Topps, and like In the Game, or not in Sports Kings, Benchwarmers, and Historic Autographs, they all have these kind of redemption programs where if you buy a full box, take that box over to their booth, open it there. They give you some free kind of redemption packs or something that's free. And Panini's, and the line for Panini's booth just stretched for like hundreds of feet, just people waiting in line to open their cards at the Panini booth so that they get these special silver packs that usually had about two cards in them. A lot of this year's basketball rookies, which are really cool. I saw like a Harrison Barnes card, Anthony Davis, those kind of cards, which, you know, there's no rookie cards right now out on the market for those guys. So it's really cool that here we are at the convention and we got Anthony Davis rookies popping off. And I saw a Harrison Barnes serial number card somebody pulled yesterday. So Topps has a limited amount of things you can get per day. So right in the morning, there's this huge line at the Topps booth because they give away 100 Bowman Platinum sets, serial numbered, 25-card set. It's got Cespedes, it's got Bryce Harper, it's got Yu Darvish, it's got Tyler Skaggs, Trevor Bauer, those kind of guys, serial numbered 2012 Bowman Platinum cards. Really nice. And they give you a whole set if you buy a box of 2012 Bowman Platinum, which is going to run you about $110, $120 at the show. Most dealers had it about that price. And another good deal they have is if you go to the Topps booth and you just open three 2012 packs, so you can go get like DA Cardboard had a deal with. You got three 2012 Topps Series 1 baseball packs for $4. And you just go open those up right at the Topps booth. And they give you a choice between one of nine mini Gypsy Queen cards. Wow. The day I got mine, they ran out of Bryce Harper. It's funny. They ran out of Bryce Harper, which you can expect. They ran out of Yu Darvish, you can expect. But they also ran out of Ryan Tannehill. But when I got there, they still had a whole stack of Andrew Luck cards and Robert Griffin III. So a lot of people from Miami and the Florida area are coming up here. And they, you know, are eating up the Dolphins cards, whereas I was able to secure an Andrew Luck mini yesterday by just opening some packs. So, cool. For me, yeah, I've just been kind of bouncing around everywhere, trying to get some interviews that you'll be able to play on your podcast over the next probably month or so, and trying to enjoy myself out here. It's a little hot. It rained on me today. It was just raining, like, oh my God. Yeah. I haven't seen rain in months, so it was a little weird. So
yeah, that is strange. What are the crowds like inside the convention center in terms of the other collectors that are there? Is it really crowded, or like what is that like?
Well, you know, it's not that crowded right now. You know, the Wednesday, it was a really late, you know, it opened at 4 and it only went to 8 for the general public. The VIPs were able to get in 2:30 yesterday. But, you know, it's really been, it was a little, you know, low-key yesterday. On Thursday, definitely a lot more people, a lot of people buying. And I anticipate kind of Friday, Saturday, Sunday for there to be kind of increased traffic. I've heard from a lot of people who are saying, oh, I'm coming down for the weekend. A lot of people get off work and, you know, don't have time on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to, you know, get to Baltimore and go to a baseball card show. So they've got to wait till they're off work. And so I expect tomorrow and then Saturday and Sunday there for to be a real uptick in the amount of people and activity. And but so far it's been fantastic. A lot of people, a lot of people just sit at a booth and just go through it. I mean, I see these guys and they just sit there just boom, 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 and then I'll leave for like a half hour, and I'll come back, I'll kind of be wandering around, come back to the same booth, and the same guy's sitting there, and he's got a big old stack of cards worked up, so it's just heaven for people, and I wish I had a little bit more time to kind of go through some stuff and buy myself. I was able to pick up a bunch of deals on some boxes yesterday, and I was going to buy some more boxes actually today, but I got caught in the rain, and then the Tops had a panel discussion that started at like 5, and then it ran through the end of the show. I thought they were going to finish that thing up in an hour, and I was going to be able to go back down and buy the boxes I wanted to get, but I'll have to go back tomorrow and head right to the blowout booth. I missed a section on the blowout booth when I first was looking at there, and they actually had this little small section where they had all these real good deals on some older basketball boxes and blasters and some retail stuff, so I was going to go back there and check it out tomorrow.
Nice. And well, you talked about the Tops panel, and let's maybe talk a little bit about that. Maybe tell everybody what that was and like where that was held and what kind of things happened during that little panel discussion.
Sure, that was on, oh gosh, I can't remember. It was Thursday, the second day of the show, and they held at, started at 5 o'clock, and they had about 8 or 9 representatives from the Tops company, a couple people from marketing, the vice president of the sports, Mark Sapir, a gentleman by the name of Clay, who is kind of the product development kind of guy over there. Some just kind of some higher ups in the sports division. That basically all the, there was about, oh, I want to say there was only about maybe about 50 collectors in this room, and they had a big kind of conference room, and they had some drinks and some food set up. But literally, Mark Sapir kind of was moderating the whole thing, and he just literally opened it up for questions. And collectors, it was mostly collectors in the room. There were definitely some kind of internet people like myself maybe that were there kind of putting information out there for Twitter and all that kind of stuff. And but yeah, it was really kind of a good solid discussion. It started up, you know, a lot of people, you know, I knew the first question was going to be, I've been waiting X amount of time for this redemption card. And literally that the guy was like, oh yeah, I have this Joey Votto that I'm waiting on. And that was literally the first question. And they went on and on about these redemption cards, which there's nothing these companies can do.
Well, it sucks for the guy sitting there with the Joey, waiting for the Joey Votto. I feel for that guy for sure.
Definitely, definitely, for sure. And
he paid money for that, and he's waiting for it. You know.
Yeah, he's waiting for it, and he, you know, he deserves that card. He pulled that card, or he paid for that redemption card on eBay, or what have you. But at the same time, Topps hands are tied because they, you know, they kind of alluded to, they get contracts with somebody like Joey Votto. It's not like they just put a redemption card for an autograph of Joey Votto just on a whim into a product. They've actually negotiated this contract with Joey Votto, and specifically Joey Votto's agent, whoever that might be. And these are things that are written in, you know, it's a signed contract that Joey Votto is going to deliver these autographs. Now, some people like Sandy Koufax and Hank Aaron and these kind of guys, they like to sign everything at once. So that's why you see a redemption card for Sandy Koufax, you know, some of these guys all year. You know, the whole 2011 release will be a redemption card for, you know, but then at the end of the year, they sit down and they have a big signing session, and he signs everything at once. Mm-hmm. Now, some of these guys, they don't mind, you know, signing their Ginter cards here and their Series 1 cards, you know, a month earlier or what have you. But, you know, some of these guys like to sign everything at once. Mm-hmm. And then somebody like Votto, he might, you know, have his agent work out this autograph deal with him. And just, you know, Joey Votto, to be quite frank, he probably doesn't give two craps about his baseball cards and his autographs. And so it's not something that's even a concern for him. And
I doubt it. I bet if he knew fans were that concerned, he might have a different attitude. But he probably is so wrapped up trying to play baseball, he's not really even thinking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, it's not even something on his mind. It's during the season. He doesn't want to think about signing 1,500 cards for Tops. And even if he has his agent blowing him up, he might be blowing, you know, telling his agent, hey, I don't want to sign these cards right now, or hey, can we do this after the season or what have you? And that's probably what happens a lot of times. That there's this real buffer between Tops and the athlete. It's the agent. And so if the agent, you know, and one of the Tops guys kind of alluded to it, he said, well, I'm not going to name names, but certain agents are more accommodating for Tops than other agents. Some agents, it just, you know, it's a, well, maybe a little bit of a hassle for them to deal with Tops and stuff. So, but yeah, redemption questions, and it's always going to be a concern. It's going to be a concern, I mean, going forward, I would think, because if we want to have, if collectors want to have autographs and products, if collectors want to have these big hits of top name players, they're just going to have to live with the fact that, A, either the guys want to sign all the cards at once and they don't want to have all these different signing sessions throughout the year to sign these cards, or, you know, there's going to be time delays on stuff. And then they talked about how do they judge, or somebody asked them, how do they, you know, so say, okay, Joey Votto's not going to sign. The deal didn't work out, you know, what have you. How do they decide what to send as a replacement? They talked about, you know, using eBay value as kind of a real-time thing, and they also use Beckett as a gauge as well. So it's very difficult sometimes when you're talking about cards that are numbered to 5 or numbered to 2 or whatever it is to really pinpoint a solid value and then kind of fulfill a decent replacement for a replacement card for collectors. So something, you know, that's just going to be a part of this industry. I think if collectors, when they have like an outstanding redemption or something that they're waiting on, don't be afraid to contact Top Support or let them know on Twitter or what have you. Twitter, Tops loves Twitter. Let's just, if they could buy stock in Twitter, they'd be all in.
I'd be all in because
they love
too.
Twitter. I would be too. But
for
I mean, they use it as. They use it as their content source. They'll release, oh, we're out of, you know, Bowman Platinum Redemption, Wrapper Redemption Packs, and just put that on Twitter, and that's it. There's nothing, you know, they use that as their outlet for content, for information, and for news, which is great for them. It's easy. It's cheap. It's free. It's and they do have a following on there, but I don't know. Somebody was telling me the other day they had 20,000 followers, and you know, I was like, well, I hope they have a whole lot more than 20,000 customers. So I know for a fact they have a whole lot more than 20,000. Yeah, you know,
there's only
probably
going to
be, I don't know, 100,000 people here this weekend. So they have a whole lot more customers than just their followers on Twitter. So
what about, they talked about like Bryce Harper getting him into like Series 2. Like, what did they say about that?
Yeah. That was really interesting. The guy said, you know, Harper gets called up. And Series 2, I think, I'd have to go back and look, but he even said, I think Series 2 was coming out, like, within a matter of weeks when Harper got the call to the Nationals. And if everybody knows, you know, you have to have MLB service time in order to be in a set like Top Series 1, Series 2, anything, you know, associated with Major League Baseball. Now, the Bowman sets, those are prospect sets, and that's something totally different. You can have Harper, you can have minor league players in those type of sets. But Bryce Harper, while he was playing for the minor league affiliate of the Washington Nationals, he can't be in Top Series 1 because he hasn't played a lick of ball in the Major League Baseball yet, even though he's, you know, drafted by the Nationals and everything. He still can't have a card in Series 1. So when he got the call, it really puts a rush on, you know, Tops. And they said it was like a real adrenaline rush, is that this is what they wait for, is this, you know, this opportunity that Bryce Harper, this huge star, this, you know, kind of possibly transcendent kind of player, he gets the call to the majors. And, you know, he said it quite frankly. He's like, you know, we had this small window to get him into Series 2. There was no possible way that they could make him like a regular. And I think the question that led to this is, why was Harper short printed in Series, you know, the Series 2, as opposed to something like Ginter, where his rookie card was, you know, not short printed. Well, the simple fact is they just could not get him into the, you know, a full print run into the Series 2. There was no way, you know, probably some of the product had shipped already, and it was just no possible way they could get a regular rookie card, not short printed, into Top Series 2, but they made the decision, and I think it was a wise decision, to go ahead and put a short print rookie in there, because I think the Topps guy even said, he said, you know, if we didn't put him into Top Series 2, what would that have done to the product? Everybody would have been like, hey, why isn't Bryce Harper in this Series 2 product? It would have totally, I think, lessened the product a little bit. I think dealers would have not appreciated as much, and the Topps guy even kind of implied that, well, shoot, right when Harper got the call, he got on the phone to a bunch of dealers and distributors and said, hey, you're going to have a Harper short print in this set. Well, you know, you want some more? You want to up your order? So that's always, you know, that's always a very key thing. And, you know, this recent trading deadline, somebody like Hunter Pence, who just got traded to the San Francisco Giants, for Topps update, they're going to have to scramble and try to get him in a Giants uniform, to get him in an airbrush uniform. They really pay close attention to the transactions, obviously, and do their very, very best when a rookie gets a call, or a player gets traded, to get them in an appropriate uniform. And if it's airbrushed, like some of the Prince Fielder stuff we saw, and some of the other cards, I'm sure collectors more in tune with that than I am. You know, they're going to do their best to try to get that player in the uniform that he's currently playing for, you know, as long as possible. But they do have a, you know, it's not like at the very last second they can just all of a sudden print up 10,000 Bryce Harper Series 2 cards. You know, it's a process. It's, you know, packaging and shipping and all this stuff has to be ready probably several weeks before even the release date of the product. You know, they've got to have everything dialed in, boom, 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 before this thing even releases. So it takes a tremendous amount of work. And, you know, I think they did, in respect to the Harper card in Series 2, I think they did a good job with it. I think it created buzz, and I think it was a smart move to get him in the set and get players like that, like Harper, who get a call. And baseball is very unique. Hockey's actually like that too. Topps doesn't have a hockey license, but hockey's like that too, where you know, a hockey player will get the call up or whatever, and somebody like Upper Deck or Panini's got to scramble to get them into whatever the newest set is and get a rookie card. So it's interesting.
Well, speaking of hockey, didn't they make a comment about wanting to be in hockey and all the sports?
Somebody asked him, he didn't come out directly and say it, but somebody asked him, hey, what about an NHL license? He said, oh, yeah, we'd love it. We'd love to be in all sports. And I'm sure he was implying basketball and, you know, that sort of thing. So, well, you know, that's just between them and the league and bidding. And they implied that it's extremely expensive for licensing, for any kind of licensing, when you're talking about not only sports licensing, but, you know, those Olympic cards, the United States Olympic Association license that they have, that ain't going to be cheap. None of this stuff is really cheap when you're talking about trying to license this stuff and get a deal with Major League Baseball, get a deal with the NBA, get a deal with National Hockey League. They're going to ask for millions upon millions of dollars and a royalty and all this fun stuff. So it's a delicate balance that they play, and there's probably somebody out there that knows when, you know, Panini Upper Deck's NHL license expire, or when, you know, they're going to re-up it and all that kind of stuff. So it's just something you really have to kind of monitor and hope that when it is time for those licensing to re-up, that Topps comes to the table with millions upon millions, and we're talking about millions of dollars that they're going to have to come up with to get an NHL license or get an NBA license. And hopefully it ends up being a good business decision for them and they're able to do it. I would love it. I would love to see it. So,
yeah. What about this? They said something about like a big Bowman set for next year. What's like the deal with that?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, he said it was, Bowman predates Topps, actually. And so apparently it's the 65th anniversary of the very first Bowman set. And the marketing guy said, look for a really big deal next year, 2013 Bowman baseball. I would, I don't know what prospect wise, what they're going to do. Actually, the guy who he came up and talked to me a little bit about He asked me, well, do you like Bowman? I was like, yeah, sure. I go to 100 minor league games every year. So it's like, yeah, I love the prospect cards and I love the prospect sets. I anticipate next year to be a really big year. I think they're going to throw in some added wrinkles. They did really well, it sounded like, with 2012 Bowman and some of the TV advertising they did, and the wrapper redemption just flew off. They had no idea that they were going to run out of wrapper redemption packs so quickly. They acknowledged that, you know, people who collect Bowman typically are different collectors than the people who collect, like, Series 1, you know, Series 2 and Ginter and those kind of thing. That Bowman just, it's a total different, you know, breed of collector. And I can definitely see that because we're talking about young players. You have to be really into it to know who the, you know, third best prospect in the New York Mets system is. You know, you have to be really in tune to that and dig for information, because it's not like minor league games are, you know, broadcast on ESPN at all. So, you know, the Bowman collectors are really, like they said, a different kind of breed. And I think for this, apparently the 65th year anniversary of Bowman, look for some special wrinkles, something about buyback, autographs, cuts. They obviously didn't want to share too many details. And, of course, we're getting way ahead of ourselves because Bowman won't release until, what, about May 2013. So yeah, we've got plenty of time to kind of salivate about that. But it's definitely something to look forward to.
Nice. Anything else from the Topps panel discussion of note?
Oh, gosh, there was something else I wanted to say. I'd have to go back through my Twitter. There was something else that was interesting. Oh, that they destroy... They destroy retail product. So I actually think they it's basically like a consignment that Tops and not Tops, Target and Walmart kind of I don't think they buy the product from Tops. I think it's all consigned space. Probably the leagues, like the Major League Baseball and the NBA, they probably help Tops get shelf space at places like Target and Walmart. And if you ever watched a show like Shark Tank on ABC, you kind of realize
Dragon's Den in Canada.
What's that?
It's Dragon's Den in Canada. It's really good too.
I've been watching that on YouTube, but yeah, they make it pretty clear that it ain't easy and it ain't cheap to get on Target and Walmart shelf space, and that's clearly obvious because we're talking about two of the biggest retailers in the United States, and they can basically do whatever they want because everybody who's in the consumer kind of product space would love to be in Target and Walmart. So I think they basically Tops, you know, kind of consigns this space at, you know, it's not like Tops call, or it's not like Target and Walmart calls Tops and says, hey, I want to put in an order for 20 retail boxes of Allen and Ginter. That doesn't happen. Tops sends it to them on their own dime. On their own dime, they send this product to them without even being paid first. And, you know, once it starts to sell through, then Tops starts getting a check.
Months later.
Apparently I had a – right. Oh, yeah, way later. Yeah, way later probably. And I had a guy who got at me on Twitter who worked at Walmart. He said he worked at Walmart for 9 years, and he said he literally has seen this happen where they pulled retail sports card – boxes off the shelf. And if you've ever worked in like a grocery store or Target, I worked at Target, so I know exactly what, there's this big cardboard box crusher at all these places. So they get all these boxes and then they put them in this big thick crusher thing and crushes them down to, you know, so that they can dispose of cardboard boxes easier and trash and stuff. And so literally he says that, I asked him, I said, do they put them in the cardboard crusher? And he's like, yep. He said he's seen it happen, that's what they – because I didn't believe it. I didn't believe that they destroyed product. I said, they didn't destroy product. They get all that product back, and that's why you see – you know, I picked up a 2011 Score Blaster for $5. You know, I'm picking up blasters for like, you know, $5, $6, you know, $20 blasters for like $5 or $6 here. And that's what I thought, that, you know, all this product got shipped back to Tops, and then Tops would dump it onto, you know, DA Card World or whatever it was, DealerNet or – and this stuff would kind of get distributed elsewhere. So, I mean, I'm not 100%. I don't think every single product gets destroyed. I still don't buy all that. But apparently, I mean, apparently it does happen on at least some stuff. It literally does. They crush the boxes. So that's why, I mean, if you get emails or get questions like, does the 2005 so-and-so Superfractor exist? Well, Superfractor is usually hobby only, but something like that where it's like a really rare card that was available in retail, it could very well have ended up in a box crusher somewhere at a Target or Walmart, apparently. So something to keep in mind.
Makes all your cards that you have now more rare, so that's a good sign. How about those UFC? Speaking of rare cards, how about those UFC? They said something about they didn't want to overflood the UFC market.
Yeah, and there was actually a collector there. I wish I remembered his Twitter handle that he shouted out. But this guy knew the UFC like the back of his hand because he won a Finest Box at the little panel discussion because Mark Sapir asked him, what's the nickname? And I can't even remember, Clay Guida's nickname or something. And the guy, boom, knew it. And then to get the box, he had to answer – what state is Clay Guida from? And the guy instantaneously said, like, Chicago, Illinois. I mean, this guy knows the UFC like nobody's business because he was just boom, boom with both those answers. He's got a UFC Finest Box, and he really seemed like he really knew what he was talking about, obviously, about the UFC, and he really loved the UFC Finest set that recently came out. And I've actually talked to a couple other people here at the show who we're like, hey, have you seen UFC Finest? It's really great. It's fantastic. Have you seen it? Have you seen the cards? And I had somebody show me. They did a box break, and they showed me some of their cards, and they were really well done. So people who like UFC are really excited about it, and that's what they said. They said, we don't want to kind of flood the market. I believe they have three releases. They have a Bloodlines release that is going to come out a little later this year. But they have a great relationship, they said, with Dana White and the UFC, and look for them to continue to make these UFC cards, and hopefully as that sport progresses and the popularity of that sport progresses, I'm sure you'll probably see more than three releases, but they don't want to shove it down people's throats right now, and they want to, you know, create a really strong demand for these cards and a strong market for these cards, and I think there is a really good secondary marketplace for these cards. And obviously, it's a growing sport and incredibly popular, and so really, really positive things I think from the UFC stuff. So collectors who collect UFC, look for more top stuff. You probably are only going to get the three releases, but it sounds like the quality of these sets are really improving. And Finest, if you haven't bought Finest UFC yet, you might want to go take a look at it, because I've had people unsolicited, prompted, just come up to me and say, hey, have you seen UFC Finest yet? And so that's pretty exciting.
Cool. Interesting. Well, anything else from the Topps discussion of note?
That's it. Chris from Freedom Cardboard, he had a video camera there and he was recording it. So okay. If somebody wants to check that out, I'm sure you could probably go to his forum and find it somehow.
Okay.
So keep that in mind if you're on the lookout for, hey, what happened at this top discussion and you want to know more. Just go to freedomcardboard.com because I'm sure he'll have that uploaded either on his YouTube account or something like that.
Okay. What about – I know I overheard you guys talking on the live stream yesterday. He said he's upgraded to a larger storefront because – it helped him sell gaming cards more because he needed more floor space to have kids play. And so I know we have a lot of people that listen to the show that want to start a business, maybe not go right into the 4,000 square foot kind of storefront, but maybe go to the National Sports Card Show and try to set up a table and stuff. So maybe talk about it from that angle, maybe a little bit of the things you talked about with Chris. A store and stuff like that.
Were you able to hear everything I was saying on that thing?
Yeah, you guys are like live streaming.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know it was coming through. Like, I didn't know the audio was coming through that clearly. I would have maybe jumped to a private conversation with him, but we just kind of talked about kind of what he was doing. He has two retail stores going right now. where he sells a lot of gaming. Gaming, gaming, gaming. Gaming is king where he is, and he's convinced that gaming is actually kind of king wherever. Right. And that he doesn't even do a whole lot of sports stuff anymore because the gaming just kills it. Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh! There's some other type of stuff, and this is stuff that I'm not really that familiar with. So, but really, his presence at the show specifically, he bought a kind of a big area, and then he kind of I'd call it subleased it out to a couple other dealers there who dealt with sports stuff. And but you know what? It honestly, if you're out there and you're thinking about starting a store, he's probably somebody I would contact because he has a pretty good handle on it. He's doing moderately well, it sounded like, kind of business-wise, but it takes a while for his first store has only been open for about a year. So good stuff there. It was good talking to him, and he said, well, hey, I'll get you set up in California with a gaming store. He's like, I guess he's something that he researched it, or he's been researching the whole United States. He's like, there's nothing around you. No, he's like, there's nothing around you.
There isn't.
He has another guy. There's another guy who sells gaming is 3 miles away from him. And he says the guy that's like 3 miles away from him gets like 150 people or something crazy on his trade nights. Just crazy. This gaming magic stuff is just unbelievable, comics and, this kind of animation stuff.
Yeah,
it's just all, it's blown up, it's really big. It's probably definitely bigger than sports cards, at least from a business perspective of opening a store and stuff. So cool. Something to think about. If I were opening a store, I would just do gaming, it sounded like, and maybe had a little wall for sports cards and not really even worry about sports cards so much and try to really pump the gaming.
You
and
could
the
do
kids
box and breaks and stuff like that with the sports cards, I think. Do it kind of on the side, maybe.
Yeah, but really push the gaming. It's like $3, your margin's really good. You sell, three packs for $10, and you're only paying, sometimes about $1 a pack. So your margin is really, really good on some of that stuff. And, it's a big kind of thing, whereas if you collect Magic and Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh!, this kind of stuff, you're going to be real connected with the other people in your area that do that, because A, you might want to play the game, you might want to have, build your deck and play a game, play a tournament, play the actual Magic game, or you just want to trade, and maybe a little bit different than sports cards, whereas you can just have your own sports card collection. I'm sure you could do that same with Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh!, but there's a game associated with these type of cards, there's an actual game you can play, and so maybe that's something kind of these sports card companies can learn from, is to try and borrow from that somehow, some way.
Yeah, make the cards useful after you buy them, other than just sit in a box,
Right, exactly.
Okay, cool. Well, what about, we're kind of running here. I don't want to make this too long. So maybe talk to us a little bit about what's coming up in the next day or so, and maybe some of the content you've gotten, some of the things people can have to look forward to.
As far as what you can look forward to, I had a conversation with Thomas Fish today, who's one of the owners at Blowout Sports Cards, which I'm sure if you found this podcast, you are familiar with the internet and familiar with them. I talked with Kevin Hefner, who's the owner of Historic Autographs Company. They're a manufacturer of kind of cut signature products and things like that, and he talked all about a new product that he has coming out, and he gave me a t-shirt and all this kind of stuff. I talked with Tim quite extensively, but check out my cards, quite extensively. That is going to be a very exciting website, and several things I'll have to talk to you off microphone about. And then I talked to some guys who are running this big fantasy football thing in Atlantic City.
Nice.
And a bunch of stuff that I've recorded, so I'm we'll definitely have some audio. They're little quick interviews, like 5 minutes here and there. Hey, tell me about this product that's coming out, boom 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 boom. We talk about a little bit about the show, and it's gonna be really good stuff, and I'm gonna continue to do that over the next several days. Get more people from, I still got to hit up a couple guys from Panini and Upper Deck and do that. And so, yeah, some audio. And you know, maybe some content stuff, but I'm not a writer, so I don't know about any kind of write-up or anything like that.
Who reads, anyways, these days?
Tons of videos. Oh, and I have tons of – I bought up some, like, some 1970s basketball packs, some early 80s stuff. So I'm going to open all those. Hopefully tonight I'm going to get down and dirty and start opening some of that. So if you go to the YouTube channel, Sports Card Show, it'll just – what I try to do is upload them on my computer, and then as I'm at the show, this stuff is just kind of uploading. So hopefully I can get a whole big old run of stuff going. Nice. But I have tons of packs, some more boxes. I'll get some more boxes tomorrow. So tons and tons of video. I'll get some more videos of booths, the Topps booth, the Upper Deck booth. I try to get there early so I can get those without, so there's not a bunch of kind of people standing around and stuff, and it's a little more quiet in the building. So I'll be doing that. So check the YouTube, you know. Check the podcast, because we'll have tons of interviews with people that are here.
Nice. Well, that probably about wraps it. We'll let you go and on to other business since it is around 11 o'clock there on the East Coast.
Yeah, but I'm ready to go. I'm ready to.
We'll go another hour, I guess. Sucks.
Yeah, I can't even go to bed till about 4 in the morning. So it kind of sucks because I'm not tired. So I'll just open a bunch of packs and do that thing.
Okay, sounds good. Well, we'll get back in touch with you again probably tomorrow and see how things are going.
Fantastic.
Cool.
Alrighty.
And we are back. Thanks again for Ryan for calling in kind of at a late hour in Baltimore. But like he said, he's kind of running on the – you get that excitement whenever you're at a show around other collectors and lots of different things. I saw like $400,000 baseballs and like autographs and jerseys and stuff. So Michael Jordan's American Express credit card. I mean, I saw all kinds of photos. So definitely head on over to Twitter, or we have some pages up at our website that you can check out as well, that about wraps it up for today, folks. Thanks again. We made it to show number 100, and I definitely couldn't have done it without all the encouragement, all the people that have liked us on all the different medias, and all the different our forum, and definitely the people that have taken the time to sign up there. Baseball Nut, San Jose Fuji, Steel Second, LGLOF, Mini Groover, gosh, there's so many more of you guys. I can't really think of them that's all off the top of my head. Just some of the people that have contacted me recently. So I just want to thank all of you for hanging with us pretty much for the whole 4 years. So thanks again for everybody that that has helped encourage me basically to do this podcast for the last 4 years. And I have no intentions to slow down or anything like that. So I really appreciate everybody's feedback, and whether it's good or bad, you can always contact us at sportscardshow@gmail.com, at Twitter at sportscardradio, and on Facebook, facebook.com/sportscardradio, and all the other ways. My phone number is probably floating around out there as well. You can probably call me, although I don't answer that much. But email, Twitter, and Facebook and those kind of things are always – I'm always pretty much available there to answer questions. And like I've said over the last 4 years, if I don't answer you, keep blasting me, and eventually it gets unfiltered or whatever, and I'm able to get to you. So thanks again for everybody, and it's we'll have lots more stuff for the rest of the week. Videos, check out our YouTube page and stuff like that, and we'll have contests. I'm doing a lot of the contests on Twitter just because it's a little bit easier, and we'll have contests and all kinds of for the rest of the week. So be sure to come back and check us out. Thanks again. For the last 4 years have been extremely fun, and I expect the next 4, and hopefully, well, I'm 30. I hope the next 40. I hope I live to at least 70. So hopefully the next 40. I don't know if I'll do the podcast that long, but at least the next – you got my commitment for the next 4 years. So we'll speak again. That's like my contract. We'll speak again the next 4 years. So thanks again, guys. We are out of here.